Good evening, boys and girls. My name is Henrik Palmgren. Thank you for stopping by. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. Our website is redicecreations.com. Check out our brand new live webcasts. That's the latest addition to the many ways we're trying to spread interesting and important information, that is. And today we have John Irvin with us on the program. He has, together with Andrew Ruchaji, co-authored Astro Theology and Shamanism, and they are also behind the DVD The Pharmacratic Inquisition. The website is gnosticmedia.com, and John has a new book out now called The Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity. And there is a website set up for that as well that you can take a look at. It's simply theholymushroom.com. And this is a critical re-evaluation of the schism between John Allegro and Gordon Wasson over the theory of entheogenic origins of Christianity, as presented in The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And this is what we're going to dive into here today. So, hi, John. Welcome back to the program. Nice to have you again.
Hello, Henrik, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So why don't we begin to talk a little bit about this schism, and maybe we can even begin to talk a little bit about John Allegro for those who aren't familiar with him or his work before we move on, talk more about Gordon Wasson. John Allegro, some of his research, some of his theories, tell us a little bit about some of the work that he did.
Well, John Allegro was originally one of the original eight members that was hired to help translate the Dead Sea Scrolls that were discovered in Qumran in the Judean desert in 1947. And in 1953 or 54, while Allegro was studying for his doctorate degree at Oxford University, he was called as basically one of the leading experts in philology and language and biblical languages to help translate the scrolls. And he was recommended with higher honors to be the sole representative for England at the time. And so he went into Israel, and or actually what was then Jordan, and began working on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And there was basically an ensuing battle between John Allegro and the rest of the other Dead Sea Scrolls translators. The other members of the translation team were almost, except for maybe one or two others, they were nearly all Catholic priests. And so Allegro, he had started out originally as, the minister aboard his ship when he was in the army in World War II. Mm-hmm. And when he left the army, he began studying for the Methodist ministry and thought he was going to go into the church a full-time thing. And but along the way, he started studying biblical languages and realized that his study of languages was making him question his religious convictions. And so that was kind of what set him on the path of, first he went to Manchester and then graduated with highest honors from Manchester, and then went on to Oxford, and then again from Oxford into Qumran with the Dead Sea Scrolls. So mm-hmm. From there, with the Dead Sea Scrolls, Allegro and the rest of the team never really agreed, because at that point Allegro really considered himself agnostic, which is basically not believing in or against any religious doctrine. And of course the rest of the members were Catholics, so he was always at heads with these guys. And the rest of the team, basically what they did was they held on to their allocations of the Dead Sea Scrolls for so long that eventually, Allegro and a lot of other researchers around the world started to think that there was a cover-up of the scrolls. And there was, in a way, there was, but it, as Allegro talks about it, it was probably more of a really go slow pace, because I think they really wanted people to forget that the Dead Sea Scrolls were out there. And he found things in the Dead Sea Scrolls, such as the teacher of righteousness being hung on a tree, being similar to the crucifixion of Jesus. And he just saw a lot of parallels that he felt made the Judeo-Christian story unoriginal. And that's been argued by a lot of other scholars, not just with the Essenes at Qumran, but you know, there's Professor John Rush just last week published a new book called Failed God, in which he argues that not only was Allegro correct in his interpretation of the mushroom in Judeo-Christianity, and not only does he argue that Allegro was correct about Jesus, and this may shock some of your listeners, actually being an anthropomorphism of the sacred mushrooms. And Professor Rush's book was just published on the 28th of October, and it's really the first academic book, and we kind of timed our books to be released about the same time, but his is really the first from a professor to actually come out and say that Allegro's work was correct. And he further goes in to show that so many of the similarities in Christianity can be found in ancient Egypt and things like that. And I know that you know, a lot of the people try and attack the research presented in, say, Zeitgeist, for instance. But
sure.
I would recommend your listeners really get into the academic work that's out there, and not just, you know, focus on other people who haven't also read the academic work, which is most of what flies around out there, is all these people arguing about the research and none of them have read any of it. So I always find that amusing.
But, I mean, are you going into that battle, so to speak, which is which it has become by this point? But are you kind of engaged in that at all, or just do you stand up and look at it like a circus as it is, in a way?
Well, it is a circus, and you know, from my perspective, I spent 3 days at Cal State Northridge or University of Northridge, whichever one it is, library, going through all of the academic journals and looking at the research on JSTOR and going through the religious archives that they had there at the university. And I found one reference that was just one guy off on his own arguing against it, but he didn't hit a lot of the points. But I found 15 or 20 references substantiating the work. And so I really suggest to people that are out there, especially attacking Zeitgeist Part 1, to really get out there and get into the universities and check the academic journals and the publications. In fact, Professor Mogdam from Tehran, Iran, in the 1970s published an article, and this can be found online, showing how Mithra was in fact born of a virgin, and how there was actually a form of Jesus in Iran 300 years before the birth of the typical Christ, so which would negate the historical Christ as we think about it. And so there really is a lot of academic work out there if people are willing to look at it. But when they go online and they do Wikipedia searches and they search in online encyclopedias and stuff, they're not going to find it, because that's not academic work, and you really need to dive into the academic journals. And after spending 3 days in the library, I pretty much decided at that point that most of the arguments against the work were baseless, that there was just so much substantiation to it in the academic journals that the attacks that are found online seemed fairly absurd.
What we can mention, of course, here, again, for listeners who aren't aware, John Allegro's pivotal work is The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And would you say, after studying some of Allegro's, well, his life, I guess, basically, or his work primarily, that this is his most important work, if you will?
I would say it is, in fact. You know, I think regardless of what Orthodox academia has to say at this point, I think it really is a huge contribution to religious studies in academia, and it's just hasn't been fully incorporated into theology at this point yet. The further we get away from Allegro's initial impact from the release of his book, the dust settles, the more we can see a clear picture of what Allegro was getting at. And you know, really what I found, which I'll get into throughout more of the discussion, is that quite literally all of the attacks against Allegro were fabricated. And I spent 4 years researching all of the entheogenic references, specifically in the Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and found that nearly all of them checked out, which startled me. And because everybody claimed that his research was completely unfounded and that his footnotes were horrible, and I spent years going through and checking all of these things, and as I reveal in my new book, The Holy Mushroom, people are going to have some things to answer to, because what it looks like is that we've had 38 years of academics attacking the work who never bothered to read it, and for that matter, never bothered to actually open up his 150 pages worth of endnotes and verify them. So we've had a handful of scholars in the last 10 years who have actually been doing that, aside from myself. Jack Herer, the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, is posed to release his new book on all of this. Professor Carl A.P. Ruck from Boston University is ready to go public that Allegro was correct. And in fact, Ruck endorsed my new book, stating that, in fact, John Allegro's work was for the most part correct. And then I already mentioned Professor John Rush's new book. So right now, we're sort of in the middle of, and in fact, it's just started in the last couple of weeks, really, but we're in the first flood of new information coming out to support Allegro. And I think that in all, if we really wanted to understand the foundations of Judeo-Christianity, instead of just believing that, some mystical God-man born by God himself and a virgin floated out of nowhere and rose up to heaven at his death and all of these things, if we use critical thinking and logic in all areas of our life, including religion, if we apply the same basic principles of physics and logic to religion as we do to the rest of life, then then suddenly the story has a lot of explaining to do. And
as long as you take it literally, absolutely, yes.
Oh yeah, and in fact, Allegro argued that many of the characters, including Jesus, were never real historical characters, and Professor John Rush also argues that Jesus was never a historical character. I argued in Astrotheology and Shamanism with Andrew Rutaji that Jesus was not a historical character. And in The Holy Mushroom, I have a new image that is also on the front cover of the book that you can see there. If your listeners go to theholymushroom.com, they'll see the front cover of the book there. But that's that's from a church in France, from Montefrain du Perigord, and that the character on the right side, up in the upper right, is actually Saint Christopher carrying the baby Jesus shaped as a mushroom on his shoulders. So that, and then Professor Rush has also just published evidence last week that from the St. Mark's Basilica in Venice, that the Jesus that's depicted there at the basilica is in fact showing showing Jesus describing himself as a mushroom. But I'll refer your listeners to Rush's work for his own description on that. They might be interested as well. I have my own podcast as well, and I interviewed Professor Rush week before last. If they'd like to check that out, they can go to the GnosticMedia.com website and go to the podcast button. It'll take them to, or it's GnosticMedia.podomatic.com is the page there, so they can find that. But I highly recommend people look at it. It is, in fact, I think, from my own personal opinion, the most important discovery in regards to religious studies made in the last century or more.
Yeah, I heard that interview you did, and it's very interesting. I highly encourage people to go over there and listen to it. It's absolutely fascinating. And how do you think this will change, or will it change in any way, the theology, primarily Christian beliefs? Is that what you're hoping for here, or do you feel that this is such a monumental structure we're facing, and it needs more in order to understand it better and to break down some of the mythology surrounding Christianity? What do you think? John?
Well, the first thing people need to recognize is that Christianity is a political system. It's not a spiritual system. It's always been designed to control the masses. And when they realize the manipulation of historical information and the suppression of information and the extermination of indigenous peoples across Europe and the usurpation of their beliefs and things like that, I think it will wake a lot of people up. The question is, will people pay attention?
Right.
And whether or not it happens quickly or slowly. Obviously, it's taken us 38 years from the publication of Allegro's book to now for academics to really start rethinking Allegro's proposals and not be so blind to it. And I think a big part of the problem is in the 1960s, Allegro first proposed that Christianity was based on drugs back in 1967, which was actually before Gordon Wasson, and most people are not aware of that. They think that Allegro had stolen the idea from Wasson's book, Soma, Divine Mushroom of Immortality, but we've found numerous newspaper articles a year before then where Allegro had already gone public, so these arguments are fairly baseless. But refresh your question to me again.
Well, it was more about how, if you think that this will in any way affect or change Christianity. We were talking about this idea of
Well, and that's what I was getting at. The thing is it's taken 37 years or 38 years up to now to go this far, but suddenly now, where we had one book on the topic before, and then plus Clark Heinrich published his Magic Mushrooms and Religion and Alchemy back in the 90s, which also argued mushrooms and Judeo-Christianity, but not that Jesus was the mushroom himself. Mm. I think now with Rush's book and my new book, plus Astrotheology and Shamanism, Jack Hare's new book coming out, and then Professor Carl Ruck from Boston University has a new book coming out next year called Entheogens and Christianity. So we've reached a point where there's going to start being a flood of information in this regard. And the question really comes down to how fast the information gets out there, how fast the academic community picks it up, and then as well as how quickly, your mainstream, what'll happen first is your average Christian will realize it, and then the fanatics will be slow to die as always because they don't read anything outside the Bible regardless.
Right. So, Allegro's work was suppressed, and the discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls, to me at least, feels like it was the same deal there. Once they began to notice or discover what was in there, contained in there, that too became suppressed. And do you know if the team that he worked with, if they interpreted things exactly as Allegro did, or did they just try to explain it away and say, no, it's this and not this. Allegro is totally off here. Do you know?
Well, they always attacked Allegro for his translations, and they attacked Allegro over the Copper Scroll, saying that it was a treasure map and things like that. And since then, Dr. Philip Davies, or Professor Philip Davies from the University of Sheffield, and as well as Professor George J. Brook have gone out public, and these are our major Dead Sea Scrolls academics today, gone out public stating that Allegro was correct, that in fact it was a treasure scroll. So there have been many academics come out and said, this area of Allegro's work was correct, we need to reanalyze that. Some have come out and said that these translations are so bad they're not usable. But see, what people have to realize is that Allegro was fighting against the other team, the rest of the team members, nonstop. And for the first, from 1954 when Allegro, or 1953-54 when Allegro joined the Dead Sea Scrolls team until 1991 when this guy, Dr. Robert Eisenman at the University of Long Beach, California, released the first translations, and that was in 91. From 54 to 91, we really had no translations of anything that the Dead Sea Scrolls said except for what Allegro provided us.
Yes.
So, you know, Allegro was really the only source from the scrolls. They were so suppressed, and every time he published anything, the rest of the team would attack him for it. And he was the one that was really out there in the public light, getting the scrolls known, getting funding to save the scrolls. Private collectors and libraries and various people all over the world had snatched up most of the scrolls. So Allegro had basically put it up upon himself to go out and meet with the museums and libraries and universities and private investors to get them to donate money to buy back the scrolls from these private collectors to be able to save them. And that's, you know, there's a couple of characters online that like to twist all of this information, and they've told me personally that they've never read any of Allegro's books, and they have podcasts and they do YouTube videos and things like that that are just complete garbage and complete lack of understanding of Allegro's history and the things that went on there. And it's really unfortunate that again people attack work that they've never read, which seems to be 99.9% of the case. It's pretty rare when this field of research is attacked by people who have actually taken the time to study it.
Yeah, it's a shame, absolutely. And, you know, so in your opinion then, I mean, do you think that Allegro's discoveries, how should I put it, take away some kind of, you know, credibility around Christianity, or does it kind of add to it? Does it spice it up? What do you think?
Well, it's twofold in actuality, and that's, in, you know, what it does is it makes you have a real appreciation for what Christianity was meant to be. When you understand that the Eucharist is the mushroom, when you understand that when Jesus says, take my flesh and eat my body and drink my blood, either, you know, are we talking about a cannibalistic religion, which poses an even bigger problem, or are we talking about Christianity being based on entheogenic substances, which is really the case with almost every other religion in the world. You know, so when we stop trying to think that, you know, that Christianity is the exception and that there's no way because Jesus appeared from nowhere and therefore everything written in the Bible is fact without any historical references to back most of what happened in the Bible, you know, when we lay down these absurd assumptions, we begin to see these things unfold. And, well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, regarding, like, the mythological story, then, of, let's say, Christ, and let's even tie it into the entheogenic connection here, does that still, in your opinion, have a valuable mythological teaching, so to speak, that we can learn from?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it basically comes down to a lot of people who were doing a lot of entheogens and trying to describe the experience, and then it eventually got usurped by people who had no knowledge of the direct experience themselves. Either that, or, you know, shamans and shamans eventually became priests, and shamans are known for huckstery and joking and things like that, and lying as well. So, you know, they're known to be expert of sleight of hand, and shamans and priests keep themselves in power by keeping their secret, you know. And priests become kingships, and kingships become empires, and that's the way things go. So
in your opinion, it's built on a weak foundation, so to speak, and it would be fairly kind of easy then to actually pick holes in the foundation to make the whole thing collapse, right?
Well, it is, you know, and contrary to some of the other researchers out there, I feel that Christianity is based on three primary foundations. The first being fertility worship, and that may startle a lot of your listeners. The second being entheogens, and the third being sun worship and astrotheology that, you know, everyone likes to attack scholars like Acharya S for. But I think if, you know, if people look beyond their predetermined conclusions from their own religious background. And if they just approach everything from having no religious background and being completely open instead of already deciding my religion is correct, you know, then they'll discover that these ancient religions have a lot more in common than most people suspect. And really, you know, what often happens is when people research these things, they focus on the differences instead of the similarities. And when you begin to focus on the similarities, that's when you begin to see the correlations between Jesus and John the Baptist and Jesus and Tutankhamen and some of the ancient Egyptian kings and Jesus and Mithra, you know, and Mithra was the male-only war god of Rome that Rome had adopted from Persia. And, you know, as Professor Karl Ruck discusses in his recent book, The Hidden World, the similarities between Christianity and Mithraism were so similar that only the names of the deity had to be changed. And that's been argued, obviously, by other scholars. And, you know, so people who think that there are no other scholars arguing these things and talking about this stuff, I really suggest you get off Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica and get out there and crack open the books and read the journals.
Right, right. So okay, let's spend a little time and talk about Gordon Wasson then, if we and then after that point we can kind of talk about the schism, or that might actually, you know, come up in context when we address Gordon Wasson. But do a little brief overview for us regarding Wasson and some of his work.
Well, Gordon Wasson, I'm actually going to start a little bit earlier in Wasson's history than is typically known about him. In Wasson's early part of his life, he was a vice president to J.P. Morgan Bank. J.P. Morgan Chase is the bank that actually just took over most of the American economy this last month in this huge U.S. government bailout, you know, which I think is ridiculous in a supposed free market capitalist system, which they've just proven failed by that very action.
Yeah.
And so Gordon Wasson worked directly for J.P. Morgan, and he was probably one of the ones on Jekyll Island when the Federal Reserve Act was put into place and things like that. So Wasson has an interesting banking history. He was also... Yeah. He was also the account manager to the Vatican and had private sessions with the Pope. And so he was a high-powered...
Sorry to interrupt you, John, but that would be for some people, then, I guess, some evidence enough to say that, oh, he was in on the game, right? He was working with the big boys, right? What would you say to that?
Well, you know, I can't put... I don't have a document that proves it, but there is certainly a lot of speculative evidence to show that he was looking out for his own interests and the interests of his, I hate to use the word handlers, but when the word fits, you know.
Yeah.
Before Wasson was a banker, he had graduated in a bachelor's degree in journalism. So he was a journalist, he was a banker, worked his way up somehow. And what's interesting is I've also discovered evidence that it was actually J.P. Morgan who had the original interest in the mushrooms, and I kind of wonder how much of the original discovery of Wasson and his wife wandering through the forest in New York and her running out and picking mushrooms is even true. And I think in The Sacred Mushroom Seeker, Wasson's own daughter, Masha, has even questioned the validity of that story herself. So when we look at J.P. Morgan, he was close friends with a woman named Harriet Hosmer. And Harriet Hosmer, back in 1854, well, she was a famous artist and sculptor. And back in 1854, she did a very famous statue called Puck. And in the statue of Puck, Puck is sitting on top of a large Amanita muscaria mushroom. Underneath the Amanita muscaria, we see several psilocybe similaciatas, or liberty cat mushrooms. And then around Puck's left arm, we see a lizard's tail wrapped around the arm, which is the symbol of the caduceae, or the symbol of drugs. And then on top of Puck's head, we have the symbol of the shell, which we talked about in astrotheology and shamanism, is a symbol of enlightenment. And there's another plant depicted there that could be a mandrake or something as well. So we have a clear depiction, and if you go to the Huntington Library, who, by the way, were the ones that finally released the scrolls after the long argument, if you go to this library, it's near Pasadena, it's in San Marino, California, they have one of the original statues of this Puck character there. And on the wall, right behind the statue, it talks about Harriet Hosmer and her affiliation with J.P. Morgan. So that was something that really raised a question in my mind, because that statue is so much older than the claimed discovery of Gordon Wasson. And then I found another reference that I haven't really mentioned much, at least publicly, is... there was a famous Russian artist who did a lot of paintings on Russian witchcraft and things like that. And if you know how to type in Cyrillic, you can really find a lot of his work. But his name was Ivan Bilibin. Mm-hmm. And he did several paintings in the late 1800s that very clearly depicted at least two types of psilocybe mushrooms along with Amanita muscaria. And then we have, of course, the obvious correlation that Valentina Pavlovna Wasson was Russian, Wasson's wife.
Yes.
So, and being that they collected all of this stuff, and their first book was about mushrooms, Russia, and history, I'm a little reluctant to believe that they were completely unaware of Bilibin's artwork, although they could have been. So, you know, I have these two art references that give me strong hesitation and following the line and forcing me to reconsider Masha's own claims in Sacred Mushroom Seeker about her father's own story. So moving forward, in 1953, there was a book that came out in London, published by the London Botanical Museum by a guy named Professor John Ramsbottom. And John Ramsbottom was the world's most noted mycologist at the time, and he had worked with another a couple of amateur mycologists, the Rolfs, and they had released a book on this subject back in the 1920s. But both the Rolfs and Ramsbottom had written a very nice long foreword for the Rolfs book, and in there they discussed the possible links between Christianity and the sacred mushroom and the ties to the plain coral fresco and a lot of these things. And a lot of the claims, you know, to jump forward for a second, a lot of the claims made against Allegro was that he stole this work from Wasson, like I mentioned earlier. But when we actually open Allegro's book and read it, we discover in this whole section in the back of his book called Endnotes that he had actually chosen to work with Professor Ramsbottom's research over Gordon Wasson's. So that's sort of the big lie that's been out there for the last 40 years, is that Allegro based his work on Wasson. It's unfounded. And so what Wasson did was, in 1953, he's in London, and he sees a sign of this book being published, and he goes and he runs buys a copy. I think the date that he claims that he bought the copy was October 26, 1953. Then what he does is, on December 21st, which was the winter solstice of 1953, he sends Professor Ramsbottom a letter. And the letter is very... It's basically telling Professor Ramsbottom that he's going to tote the line, that the plain coral fresco, which very clearly depicts Adam and Eve standing on either side of the Amanita muscaria mushroom, is not a mushroom. In fact, he says in this letter, rightly or wrongly, we're going to dismiss the plain coral fresco as a mushroom. Well, Ramsbottom... it's, you know, Ramsbottom, what Wasson claims in his own writings is that, you know, it was typical for Ramsbottom not to reply and things like that. But I decided to look at this from a different angle. What if Ramsbottom was just sick of this amateur mycologist telling him what is and what isn't a mushroom? And so what Ramsbottom did is on page 48 of the second edition of his book, Mushrooms and Toadstools, he printed Wasson's entire letter. And then the second edition of Ramsbottom's book was published, I believe, just a few weeks later in January 1954. So Wasson is not even aware that his letter, where he contradicts himself, saying rightly or wrongly, we're going to dismiss the fresco, he never realizes that that was printed. So 16 years later, Allegro's book comes to print in The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and he quotes that letter in Ramsbottom's book, dismissing Wasson with his own words. And so this is the big scam. Wasson, on September 14th of 1970, launched a public attack in the Times Literary Supplement against John Allegro, and Wasson initiated the attacks. So I want to be clear on that. A lot of people have argued that Wasson was trying to avoid getting involved in the whole thing. It is very clear from Wasson's own writings that he initiated most of the attacks against Allegro's work, and this is all revealed in my new book. This is a real detective story.
This is really interesting, because what the image that you're presenting here and the way I interpret it is that he was... Gordon Wasson was a charlatan, or potentially even kind of a straw man to take over the work, if you will, of what Allegro did then. And do you think that he was trying to subvert the topic, the issue, or try to make people to focus on it in a different way? What do you think the agenda was, if he had any?
I think he definitely had an agenda. I think the agenda was several fold, and I mentioned his ties to the Vatican, and he may have been taking orders from the Vatican. That is a strong possibility. But even more interestingly, we find a couple of different things in Wasson's letters and one thing and his books. But one thing that Wasson had done around Judeo-Christianity was he created a very safe position that he published in Soma, The Divine Mushroom of Immortality. And you can see him create the argument in the 1950s, and then he sticks to it all the way until his death. Whether it's in his private letters or his books, he holds to that position until his death. And that position is that, which is a false date to begin with, is that mushrooms and Judeo-Christianity were limited to 1000 BCE and the Book of Genesis. Well, the problem with that is the Book of Genesis is argued by most academics to have been written in about 586. So Wasson is off by at least 414 years on that. And so what it does is it creates a very safe position for him and for Christianity, for him to be able to go around and look at Arab cultures, look at this culture, look at that culture, and find all of these similar correlations. But he sets up a safety net around Judeo-Christianity that if anyone enters into, they automatically get attacked and they're automatically refuted as absurd, because Wasson has created this 1000 BCE theory.
Yes.
And so Allegro sees Wasson's letter and reads Robert Graves' books and finds the discussion on, finds the letter of Wasson saying rightly or wrongly, then finds Robert Graves' work as well. And in Robert Graves' book, and a lot of people don't know this, they say, well, it's an absurd theory to suggest that mushrooms could grow in the Middle East and in Jerusalem. You know, like some of these guys will show a picture of a sand dune and then, expect you to believe that, well, oh, that's the end of the argument, because the entire Middle East is just sand dunes, never mind the ski resorts and the cities and the mountains and the deserts and the valleys and the lakes and everything else that they have in the Middle East.
Sure.
And so Robert Graves in 1958 reported seeing Amanitas growing in Jerusalem. And so that's very little talked about. But we do have this evidence of these things there. So Allegro saw Graves, and he saw Ramsbottom, and that's what he based the work on. And he saw Wasson's waffling position in his letters and his coveted 1000 BCE position that he put forth in Soma, The Divine Mushroom of Immortality. And he quotes Wasson dismissingly a few times, and that's it, because that's not where his work was focused. So that's part of the big lie that's been perpetuated into society about Wasson and Allegro for the last almost 40 years. And then we have another interesting factor, and something that I discovered in researching the publication of Wasson's books and everything, is that it appears that from the publication of Mushrooms, Russia, and History, from a mere 412 copies of this book, because you have to remember, he printed 512 copies and gave 100 copies away to his friends. Simple math, that leaves 412 copies for him to sell. Well, what we figured out was that he made a minimum of $57,000 or $58,000 in 1957 money, which in U.S. dollars today, that's equivalent to $378,000 on the low end of what he made off of that book. And he goes around and he accuses Allegro of profiteering off of the sacred mushroom and the cross, and there's this big hoopla, and he accuses Allegro of publishing an article in the so-called News of the World, which is a newspaper that Allegro never published in. Allegro's four-part series, it was actually published in a newspaper called the Sunday Mirror. And then what Wasson did was he created this false newspaper with false headlines, and said that Allegro, it's like there's a really bad newspaper here in the United States called The Inquirer. And, it's like, you guys, I'm sure, have them in Europe, too. They're just garbage, newspapers.
They're all over the place.
Ridiculous junk.
Right.
Right. So Wasson accused Allegro of publishing in one of those newspapers. But Allegro had actually published in the Sunday Mirror, which is as reputable as Life magazine. And some people may remember that Wasson and... on May 13th, 1957, published The Discovery of the Magic Mushrooms in Mexico in Life magazine. So basically, Wasson attacked Allegro for doing the exact same thing that he did. And Wasson attacked Allegro for profiting exceedingly well off of the publication of the articles. Wasson himself, 13 years earlier in 1957, had made $6,000, which is about the equivalent of $42,000 today for that single article. So Wasson, another interesting thing that we found was that Wasson was actually sending what he believed was Allegro's private financial information to a company called Helix Investments Limited in February 1970, before Allegro's book was even published, before Allegro's newspaper article even went to print. So Wasson, and, I don't get into it in the book because it's beyond the scope of the book, but... if others want to dig into this area, it might pull up some interesting stuff. So Wasson is sending this private information out to investment firms about Allegro's background. And then Jonathan Odd and obviously Wasson were close friends. So Jonathan Odd and Pharmacotheon has been spreading this same lie. And so I researched this and I discovered that, the entire thing was baseless. In fact, I've been working with John Allegro's daughter for 4 years next month, and so we had her go through the Allegro archives and through all of his letters and mail, and I mean, he saved everything. And there's just no sign of this so-called £30,000 payment, which would, back in 1970 money would be, like several hundred thousand dollars today. And not only that, but the pound being almost doubled in the dollar, that's a significant amount of money. But there's just no evidence for claims like this. So, these are the sort of things that we discovered in researching Wasson's background, the coveted 1000 BCE theory, that if Allegro was correct, it automatically refuted Wasson's theory and put his recent publication, Soma, Divine Mushroom of Immortality, in jeopardy, as already being disproven.
Really interesting. So,
and so,
so Wasson basically, in one way, then, are criticizing Allegro for something that he himself was guilty of, probably, when it comes to dealing with the money, at least.
Well, over and over. I mean, as you'll see from my new book, The Holy Mushroom, the book is just laden with Wasson hypocrisy. There's hardly a page that Wasson doesn't attack Allegro for something that he himself did. But that's not even the interesting part. Well, it's part of the interesting part, but there's still more to it. Wasson was a very good marketing strategist, and working for J.P. Morgan and all of these things. He was very tuned into how to manipulate markets, how to make $378,000 off of selling 412 copies of a book, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Wasson, what I started realizing is that, you know, and there's this letter that nobody, that Jonathan Ott and all of these guys don't talk about. And Wasson published his attack on September 14th in the TLS, and then Allegro rebuts that letter. And then what Wasson does is Wasson sends a private letter to Allegro, which people talk about. Okay, but on the same day or the following day after he sent the private letter to Allegro, he followed up with a second letter to the TLS on September 16 that was very long and just flat out attacked Allegro, called him a microphobe, just calling him names and things like that, just an absurd article. But in this article is four paragraphs where Wasson is literally bragging about his research background and about the extravagant publication of his books. And he doesn't realize that Allegro could brag about, if he so wanted to, his own history of being a biblical expert and studying at Oxford and studying the Dead Sea Scrolls and have already published, you know, at that point, six or seven books on the history of the Dead Sea Scrolls and Judeo-Christianity, but Allegro doesn't even mention it. So Wasson is there just bragging about this extravagant publications of his book. So what I started thinking about, well, if Wasson initiated the attacks in the TLS, what would he gain by that? Mm. Well, first off, as I mentioned, he's protecting his 1000 BCE theory. He's furious about that, and he at this point he doesn't even know that Wasson had found the letter, rightly or wrongly, to Ramsbottom. So when Allegro rebuts his letter in the TLS, Allegro's letter says, "I rebutted you on chapter 9, footnote 20, I believe is what it was. Your quote, rightly or wrongly," and then I already dealt with that, you know, and Allegro just dismisses Wasson as an idiot, and so, you know, Wasson thinks that, you know, Allegro's depressed and he won't reply to him and he won't respond. And Allegro's like, "You know what? I see through your transparency. I see the whole thing. I'm not going to deal with you. You're acting like a 2-year-old. You're jumping all over the place. You're starting false information in newspapers, saying things that isn't there. And in fact, I did deal with it playing Crawl Fresco, and I quoted you directly, rightly or wrongly, and I don't need to go any further." And that's not what Allegro says, but to me, that's the attitude that he had toward Wasson.
Mm.
And so you know, on September 16th, Wasson is furious. He writes a private letter to Allegro discussing this private letter to Ramsbottom, stating, "That letter was never meant to go out to the public, and what I wish to say I said in Mushrooms, Russia, and History." So it's like he's yelling at Ramsbottom, though he's talking to John Allegro. Right, and that letter had been already in print for 16 years, and Wasson didn't know that his whole game about the 1000 BCE argument had already been given up. He didn't know that his own letter had been published, destroying his entire argument. So Wasson had this double standard argument that he was holding on to, and then he was using Allegro's publication to advertise his own books and sell more of Soma, Divine Mushroom of Immortality. So I really think that the main point is to protect his theory and simultaneously sell a lot more books off of Allegro's back.
Right.
And then smash Allegro in the process and elevate himself back up as the number one guy in the field. You know, and it's like if you start looking at these things in terms of how a banker would think, you know, a lot of things start clicking together. And I don't know if you read the article that I did in 2006 with Michael Hoffman, but we cover a lot of that information. So, you know, there's other things that I found in there too, that many, many other things. Actually, one of them that I'll mention is that Wasson writes in one of the letters to the Times Literary Supplement, he writes that, you know, Allegro chooses to use the works of a man who chooses to do experiments in ESP and talk to dead Egyptian priests, right? What we discovered is that, you know, and a lot of people will know this if they're familiar with the research, is this so-called man was Dr. Andrea Puhuric, who wrote the Sacred Mushroom, the key keys to the door of eternity.
Right.
Well, and right, so what we found is that Puhrich and Wasson had met in 1956 or 57, and Wasson had agreed to do ESP experiments with Puhrich, and on top of that had invited Puhrich to Mexico with him on one of his trips. So here we have another instance of Wasson being a hypocrite. So, you know, just blatant stuff like this. But furthermore, what we discovered in researching this, or what I discovered, was that Puhrich had just left his post as captain of the U.S. Army Chemical Division yeah. at Edgewood, Maryland,
yeah.
and was in charge of collecting chemicals for the U.S. Army for the MK Ultra project. So what we have here is Wasson simultaneously disparaging Puhrich while protecting him. If you follow what I'm saying here, he doesn't state Puhrich's name intentionally because he wants to protect him, but he wants to use Puhrich as a way to dismiss Allegro. So he doesn't mention Puhrich by name. He just calls him a man, when in fact Puhrich was a medical doctor. You know, and so what Wasson is trying to do is make Puhrich, without saying who it is, seemed like some crazy lunatic that Allegro based all of his work on. And, you know, so there's this, the entire thing is just filled with conundrums
yeah.
like this of Wasson's double standards.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just really eye-opening to me because, you know, I used to just think that Wasson's research was perfect, but you know, by the end of this study, you know, it's very clear that every scholar really needs to be taken point by point and dismissed point by point. You know, we can't have any of these blanket dismissals. All of Allegro's work is wrong, or Allegro's theory, which is what Michael Hoffman and I talked about. Mm. Allegro had many theories. You know, one theory was that Jesus was the mushroom, but in the Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, he lays out hundreds of theories. So, you know, which theory are we talking about specifically? You know, and is the Jesus theory able to be substantiated? And in fact, as Professor Rush and my new book show, it is in fact able to be substantiated. We can say with reasonable assurance that there is evidence to support Jesus being a mushroom. We don't have evidence to support him as a historical living human 2,000 years ago.
Mm.
We do now have evidence showing that he was a mushroom. So, you know, it does make, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be jumping out of their skin and wanting to strangle me as they listen to this.
No, definitely not. Many of our listeners are up to the ball on this thing, and we've had you on the program before, John, and, you know, we've talked about this, and this is a really interesting thing that we like to follow up on. We are actually approaching the end of the first segment here, John. I want to ask you if you have the time and interest to continue talking more in our member section.
Sure, let's do that, but I would like to take a break for 5 or 10 minutes if we could do that.
Absolutely, no problem. Before we do that, though, I do want to make sure that you mention your website so people who are interested in getting your latest book called The Holy Mushroom can get a copy of it.
Absolutely. My website is GnosticMedia.com. That's GnosticMedia.com. They can also check out TheHolyMushroom.com and for the book's website specifically. But if they go to the Gnostic Media website, you can also get copies of Astrotheology and Shamanism there, as well as my DVD, The Pharmacocratic Inquisition.
Very good. So the main website, GnosticMedia.com, and also TheHolyMushroom.com. So stay with us, John. We'll take a short break here then and continue in the member section.
You got it.